Well, hello there. Welcome to the Queer Conjure podcast. QueerConjure.org is queering the path towards magical liberation. We place the T at the beginning of the acronym. We become inspired by witnessing other trans and queer folk fully living their whole selves and diligently care for our community using magical practices and equitable principles. I am Jasper Joy. My pronouns are they, he. I am a genderqueer witch, tarot scholar, community chemist, Venusian writer, and elder babe of the 90s. My work is defined by open-hearted ethics, neurodivergent experiences, and a blatant disrespect for the state. Please consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/queerconjure. It's because of supporters on Patreon that I'm managing to get this project off the ground. That's patreon.com/queerconjure. Quick content notification. This is a podcast meant for grown-ups. I do drop some F-bombs. I do talk about sex sometimes, and I talk about trauma sometimes. So take care of yourself and the ones around you the best way you know how. Oh, my queer witches. How the hell are you? How's your breath? What do you notice in your body when you exhale? For me, as I breathe out, I feel so much potential for integration, wisdom, and joy. There's so much I'm ready to let go of and so much I'm ready to embrace. In this episode, we are going to focus on the chariot. I'll tell you why 2023 is the year of the chariot. I'll break down all the important, juicy aspects of the card. Then we'll do a short witchcraft lesson on creating a place of power within yourself. Plus, plenty of book recommendations. All right, so right now, in the moment in time that I am in, we are officially in the year of the chariot, 2023. So 2 + 2 + 3 = 7, which means that 2023 is the year of the chariot, which is the 7th card in the major arcana of the tarot. Every year has a major arcana correspondence. I like to engage with these year of cards by studying them at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year to see how the meaning of the cards can change over time for me. That's the mystery and the beauty of these cards, after all, these tarot cards. They're always changing in the eye of the beholder. We can and should study all we want to, whether that's through reading books or having a teacher, but how we interact with the cards really comes down to personal intuition and our relationship with them over time. The number 7 represents victory. Take inventory of all you have managed to overcome in 2022 and throw yourself a little parade. Mind your ego, though. There's still a lot of work ahead. You have leveled up, even if you don't feel it yet. None of us are perfect, but we're all worthy of celebration. Okay. So, what are the aspects of the chariot I want to share with you in this episode? I want to talk a little bit about binary thinking, identity and ego, willpower, trust, and most of all, boundaries. I have a lot to say about the chariot and how it relates to boundaries. So let's get into it, witches. The following is the from the Spacious Tarot Guidebook. The Spacious Tarot. I'm trying to say that slowly because I know I have a little bit of a lisp. I'm just so gay. The Spacious Tarot Guidebook says, autonomy, control, willpower. The chariot gives you the will to press on even when you are going against the current. There may be obstacles. There may be complications. You might have to navigate rocky terrain. It won't be easy, but how can you make it happen? The chariot asks you to remember who you are and to define exactly what it is you want to do. When you focus intensely on the task at hand, you can move mountains. Who are you? What is it exactly that you want to do? These are not easy questions to answer, but the placement of the chariot within our lives right now signifies that we do actually have the answers. We just need to spend a fair amount of time reflecting and remembering. Do you remember that part in The Lion King when Big Sky Mufasa is like, remember who you are? I cannot do a James Earl Jones voice. So Big Sky Mufasa says, remember who you are, to young adult Simba. That's the kind of challenge that the chariot brings to the table. The chariot marks a milestone in maturity and a new chapter in evolving consciousness. Just like Simba finally coming to terms with the fact that life can't be carefree all the time. In the Smith-Waite tarot deck, two sphinxes rest before the charioteer. One white sphinx, one black sphinx. These images of light and dark, black and white, feminine and masculine, positive and negative, show up a lot in the tarot decks. I'm leaving that in there. I said tarot decks. I meant to say tarot decks that haven't gone out of their way to challenge binary thinking. The chariot must learn how to create fluidity between two energies that first appear as opposing forces, but are actually two points of a continuous circle where everything is ultimately connected. Queer magic requires learning how to understand and harness the energy of what is less easily defined. Queering the chariot is about abandoning the black and white thinking of the binary and engaging with all of those fabulous, beautiful colors between. So if we pause for a moment and look closely at the Smith-Waite version of the chariot, also known as Rider-Waite-Smith, we can see that the charioteer within the chariot seems to have no bottom half, almost like they're cut off at the hips, or they've been cemented into the stone block, perhaps. There's no visible way for them to exit the carriage. They don't seem to be struggling, though. They seem rather relaxed, as though they have willfully accepted to take on the chariot as an actual part of themselves. It feels like a stark representation of what can happen when we allow our identities to over-define us due to ego. An article from translibrary.org says the following. The ego is an identity that we have constructed for ourselves, and it is false in the sense that it doesn't come from our true self deep within, but rather is a combination of our beliefs about ourselves. I don't know whose voice that was. It just felt good to do. So this is like perhaps like a police officer who feels unable to stop being a police officer, even with the overwhelming evidence that their occupation inflicts violence and despair onto others. Their belief of to serve and protect, perhaps, might be so set in stone that they can't see the larger implications of harm their position creates. This also shows up in the queer community, y'all. Like when we get a little too specific about what it looks like to be a lesbian or to be gay or to be bisexual or to be transgender, we often end up painting ourselves into these tight little corners and cutting ourselves off from the fluidity that queerness offers to begin with. What's more, there are no visible reins with which to steer the sphinxes, who seem to be sitting on their haunches, each one folding their front paws in front of their little bodies. This means that the physical control of forward momentum is an illusion. If the charioteer wants to get anywhere, it's going to take an exceptional amount of willpower. And luckily enough, willpower is one of the core meanings of this card. This card is often about the victory of overcoming obstacles by sheer willpower. I feel a deep connection to this aspect of the card as a trans and queer human, because it often feels like it's by sheer willpower, my own willpower, and that of my trans ancestors and my chosen family, that I am able to break free of the gender binary of heteronormative standards and a capitalist view of what it means to be successful. As a genderqueer witch, it's by way of accessing my inner chariot that I am able to stray from the normative ways society tries to enforce and find a way of life that is rebellious, joyful, and true to the deeper essence of who I am and how I connect to the world. So I sincerely hope 2023 brings you, dear listener, a new expansive way to be who you truly are. I'd like to take a moment to tell you about Raven and Crone. Raven and Crone is my personal one-stop shop for all of my witchcraft needs. Their shop specializes in high-quality products created by local magical practitioners and crafts persons. Say that with a lisp. With an emphasis on sourcing products that are botanical, organic, ecologically conscious, and affordably priced, which is great because I don't always have that much money. Raven and Crone is a witch-owned and operated old age metaphysical pagan supply store located in the Blue Ridge mountain town of Asheville, North Carolina. Raven and Crone is where I, Jasper, facilitate meditations and teach Tarot 101. The link is in the show notes. In the book by Betty Martin called The Art of Receiving and Giving, she says that becoming trustworthy depends on skills. Skills that allow you to be responsible for yourself, your limits, and to respect the boundaries of others. These are the necessary skills of the chariot. The Art of Giving and Receiving is a book that focuses on the multiple implications of physical touch and teaches a modality called the Wheel of Consent and introduces games of touch that promote healing and self-reflection and ultimately examine consent deeper than the idea of just ask before you touch. The charioteer has gotten this far because they want to move forward. They want to be a skilled, trustworthy person who does respect the personal boundaries of others, but longs to overcome systemic barriers. It's my current working belief that the Magician tarot card, the Chariot tarot card, and the Temperance tarot card represent three stages of the same person. So like the Magician could be an apprentice, and then the Chariot is ready to break out on their own, and Temperance is ready to take on an apprentice and start the cycle anew. The Charioteer has proven themselves to their teachers. Now they just need to prove their skills to their own self and trust themselves before they can evolve further into the next stage of maturation. Okay, so if we turn back to this Smith-Waite version of the Chariot, we can see that there are three visible boundaries. The first is the actual Chariot standing guard, who must believe we are trustworthy before we are granted permission to pass. The second is the water, which represents the boundaries we're not always conscious of, but are still energetically trying to keep us safe in often seemingly counterintuitive ways. The third boundary is a large wall in the background that seems to be blocking a city from the outside world. So I learned about three types of boundaries from the book Polysecure by Jessica Fern. I will put a link in the show notes for that book too, because it's a fabulous book. I think everyone should read it. It's the first book I read where attachment styles and boundaries and intimacy were talked about in a non-monogamous, not heteronormative format. So the three types of boundaries are healthy, porous, and rigid. Healthy boundaries allow us to connect with others while maintaining our sense of self. We can share our vulnerable feelings with someone while still giving them enough room for emotional autonomy, and we can accept someone's vulnerability while remaining sovereign. Healthy boundaries allow us to be connected and protected simultaneously. Porous boundaries allow us connection, but no protection. So we'll let the thoughts and feelings of others override our better judgment, and we overstep the boundaries of others as though their life has become our job. Porous boundaries sacrifice safety, ours and the other person, for the sake of connection, which is the counterintuitive part, because when we act this way, we're desperately seeking a sense of safety. Rigid boundaries keep us protected, but do not allow us connection. We will block out the love, thoughts, and opinions of others because we're afraid of being hurt. We don't share anything with others about ourselves that might be seen as vulnerable. We come off as cold or withdrawn. Oh my gosh, oof. I happen to be in the process of breaking my rigid boundaries habit, but it still happens sometimes. So my partner describes it as the one minute I'm standing there in front of them, and the next it's like, bam, a giant brick wall just slams into place and I disappear. My current inner chariot is trying to learn how to turn that wall into a cute little picket fence, so to speak. It's one of the reasons my personal witchcraft practice is mostly about open-heartedness, because having an open heart and being safe is the overarching lesson of my life. So in this light, the chariot can be seen as a symbol for healthy boundaries, the water as porous boundaries, and the wall built around the city in the background as rigid boundaries. We usually have to figure out how to have healthy boundaries as adults from scratch. For a lot of us, myself included, it's not exactly a skill set passed down by those who raised us. So we learn by trial and error, and if we're lucky, a fuckload of therapy. Our boundaries are the way we protect our hearts, our minds, and our bodies. Our attachment styles and our boundaries are deeply connected, as they both develop through the way we experience caregivers from our childhood and relationships from our adult years. If we're going to remember who we are and what we want to do, which, if you'll remember, is what the chariot is requiring of us, we have to be aware of our boundaries and how they're affecting the lives of others and our own lives, for that matter. All right, so if you want some help with boundaries, which you probably do, you should check out a book called Boundaries and Protection by Pixie Lighthorse. It's literally an instruction manual for boundaries. It even has language prompts that you can use, like, in order to build trust, I need to give and receive respect. Or, I cannot allow myself to be treated this way. Or, did I overstep your boundary? I am so sorry. It's really one of the best gifts I've ever been given. Thanks, Mariah Menez. And it's required reading for a lot of my clients because I strongly believe we all need an instruction manual for how to have healthy fucking boundaries. So, again, I will put a link in the show notes. I have something to tell you. I am a book nerd and a bit of an anarchist. You might have noticed already, and that is why I am so deeply honored to be an affiliate of Firestorm Books. Firestorm Books is a collectively owned radical bookstore and community event space in Asheville, North Carolina. Since 2008, Firestorm Books has supported grassroots movements in Southern Appalachia while developing a workplace on the basis of cooperation, empowerment, and equity. If you go to queercontra.org and on the upper menu bar, there's a link labeled Books. You just click that link to browse a list of my Jasper favorite books. Anything you purchase through that link will return 10% back to me to support the creation of this podcast. So, say you buy a book for $30, Firestorm sends me $3. Firestorm's mission is to demonstrate the feasibility and desirability of a workplace based on free cooperation. They seek to sustain and nourish their collective through fulfilling work, personal empowerment, and equitable compensation while providing a hub for anarchist thought and culture in WNC.
Sitting in my place of power, I look out of the world. Sitting in my place of power, I look out at the world. I look to the east, I look to the south, I look to the west, I look to the north. In the center, there is me. Me, and I'm feeling safe and free, and I'm part of all I see.
Oh, amazing. Okay, so that was a little clip of my child, Phoenix, who is 8, singing a song by Anne Hill from the Circle Round CD. The song is called My Place of Power. Welcome to the segment called From the Grimoire, where I, Jasper, give you a short witchcraft lesson that I pulled from my own personal Book of Shadows. I am so excited to share this with you, and I hope you really like it. A couple of years ago, I made the decision to begin EMDR therapy, which stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing, EMDR. One of the first things I learned with my therapist was creating a safe place within my psyche. This was to act as a calm, neutral place I could conjure within my mind in order to recover from feelings of stress and anxiety, especially when the work of EMDR was really challenging. Again, that's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR. It's a modality that focuses on trauma recovery, so it makes sense that a well-developed safe place is necessary so that the nervous system can have a chance to cool off. Okay, why did I start talking about therapy when this is supposed to be a short witchcraft lesson? Because creating a safe place was almost exactly like one of the very first witchcraft skills I ever learned a million years ago, which was how to cultivate an internal place of power, my place of power. I also like to think of this as an astral place of power. Creating a place of power trains you, the witch, to tap into strong magic rather quickly. When I say quickly, I don't mean you learn how to do it quickly. It actually takes a whole lot of practice. What I mean is, once you're sufficient at it, you can access that strong magic quickly. I spend some time in my place of power before I cast a spell and when I offer venerations to the full moon. I also like to access my place of power before I approach a conflict, when I have to set a boundary, or when I am about to start any kind of therapy. When creating your personal place of power, I recommend 5 ingredients: a visual, a movement, a smell, a sound, and an object. For example, someone beginning the process might choose the visual of a beautiful clearing with an old oak tree in the middle, a movement that feels like their arms are branches swaying in the breeze, the smell of grass, the sound of songbirds, and a favorite stone to hold in their hand. You can start by setting aside just 10 minutes every day, or whenever you feel like it, and call these ingredients to your mind one at a time, creating a place within yourself that is just for you, a place where you can feel magic pulsing all around you. You can also create art that represents this place: a poem, a collage, even an altar, a song. But I recommend keeping representations of this place private. It's yours and yours alone, even though in a sense your place of power exists everywhere. It's connected to everything. The point is to eventually have an almost visceral connection to your place of power. I say almost because you are in control of it. I invite you to try this practice in whatever way feels right, good, and necessary to you. If you're into somatics, bring some of those skills in as well, noticing where in your body this place of power exists. Every time you practice this meditation, you will be filling your place of power with your own unique energy, which will create a well of magic you will be able to draw upon later. I'm attaching a link to a place of power meditation by Starhawk in the show notes, and there will be a place of power tutorial on Queer Conjure Patreon. Wow, I did it. I made a podcast episode. Please remember to check out the links in the show notes for all of the books I talked about and all of the affiliate links and the link for my Patreon. Blessed be my queer witches. Mwah. Blessed be merry meet, merry part, merry meet again.
Sitting in my place of power, I look out at the world. Sitting in my place of power, I look out at the world. I look to the east, I look to the south, I look to the north.
Cut. And in the center, there is me. Me, and I'm feeling safe and free, and I'm part of all I see.